Talking this morning, of course, with Joff Parrish and Maria Tomchik, co-editors at Eat the State. How are you both this morning?
I'm thoroughly embedded.
To quote the headline from The Onion that was eerily prescient from the week before Bush was inaugurated, our long national nightmare of peace and prosperity is finally over.
So very appropriate.
Yes, and I'm sort of torn between wanting to hide in bed with the covers over my head and wanting to shut the country down. You know, it's sort of 50-50.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about the obvious, war in Iraq, the intense bombing of Baghdad, and the media coverage of this.
Well, you knew it was going to be bad when you were reading the reports of CNN, ABC, NBC, you know, all pulling their reporters out of Baghdad just before the bombing started.
Because who needs them, you know?
Right. We've got reporters embedded in military units following U.S. troops, so who needs them in Baghdad keeping track of what the targets are, who gets bombed, how many people are in the hospital, et cetera. Right now, the only organization that's actually trying to do a count is the International Committee of the Red Cross, which has about 6 people in Baghdad passing out medical supplies. They're trying to keep count of how many people are in hospitals with shrapnel injuries or have been killed by U.S. bombs, but they haven't been able to keep up.
And yeah, let's not forget a couple things on that particular score, which is one that Saddam Hussein's government, what there is of it at this point, has every incentive also to underestimate casualties. And secondly, the United States has a track record of targeting hospitals. In fact, there were news reports coming out on particularly on Arab news channels, and I have some of that information with me if folks are interested in seeking out some alternative views. Where, you know, you had people in the hospitals, like, you know, mothers who had just had C-sections and things. People who could leave were leaving because they fully expected the hospitals would be targets, which, you know, is a violation of the Geneva Convention. But that, along with the actual notion that there are human beings underneath that brilliant light display, seems to be completely absent from network news coverage in this country. You know, they really have thrown aside all pretense of objectivity in covering this war. It really is just blatant propaganda. We bombed this, we did that. And, you know, if you want to maintain not just your sanity, but any sense of what's actually going on in the course of the conduct of this war, the smartest thing you can do is turn that television off.
You know, absolutely.
There's plenty of other places where you can get far superior information, and all watching the television is going to do is either, you know, lead to your breaking the screen, or you know, planting in your head ideas and notions of what's going on that are just, or ways of looking at it that are just fundamentally false.
Although, Mike, I understand you found a good source for TV.
Yeah, I actually partly agree with that. I think certainly of the American coverage. Yeah,
well, I was referring to the networks.
Yeah, but luckily I get the $15 a month cable deal, and we get the CBC coverage, which is far superior to the to the U.S. coverage. So I recommend people watch that. I mean, it's still not, you know, totally great, but it's light years better than the U.S. network coverage.
Yeah, right. And
as far as radio is concerned, too, I found BBC radio to be a little bit better than NPR, which is really dismal.
And you knew a couple years ago when NPR hired the former head of the United States Information Agency, which basically is the broadcast wing of the CIA. You know, you knew at that point that particularly in this sort of a moment that NPR was going to be dismal, and that's exactly what they've been. On the television front, also, for people who have the computer capacity, you can also get the Al Jazeera web link, which, you know, it's in Arabic, obviously, but even the photos and images alone will tell you'll lot more.
You'll get some concept of who's in the hospital with shrapnel wounds. For example, I saw a few clips from Al Jazeera TV that showed a lot of women and children and with shrapnel wounds on their legs and arms, places where you would expect to see them.
Yeah, so that's www.al-jazeera.net, And for, you know, for people who have the computer capacity to get video, that's I recommend it. It's worth looking at.
Speaking of the embedded journalists that are with the units, it was part of the surreal press conference from the Defense Department yesterday when the first bombs really started raining down on Baghdad. General Myers had announced as part of that that they had some really good footage from a couple of the units that were embedded with a couple of the military units, and that would be coming out later. And it was just kind of surreal getting that from, well, General, shouldn't that actually be coming from, like, those outlets, you know, that news outlet,
instead
of, like, being announced by you?
Well, it is part of the military effort. And, you know, this was the whole concept of embedding, is that you had correspondents putting on the same uniforms, you know, emotionally bonding with the troops. And it really shows in the coverage. As a propaganda move, it's been brilliant. It certainly doesn't serve the public very well. But yeah, there's plenty of other types of information out there that people can seek out. We have the internet, which is something we didn't have during the Gulf War.
Right, but a lot of people don't have the internet. You know, I mean, it's still one of the best sources, luckily for us, because we are blessed to have that. Mm-hmm. But so many people out there don't have that, and
well, or they don't know that they're not getting the straight scoop from the networks. I mean, that's the sad reality of it also. But you know, even in a metropolitan area like Seattle, where a lot of people do have the internet, where there are a lot of different media choices, you know, the mainstream media that we have is by and large serving us pretty badly. As there's been a striking difference between the Times and PI, for example, because the PI has had protest stories pretty much above the fold for the last several days. The Times has been very carefully below the fold every single day. You know, you wouldn't want to offend people on those newsstand sales. And you keep seeing references to this spectacular light show and how this makes great TV and it's a new type of reality television show, except that, you know, it's no more real than all those other reality TV shows. It's very highly scripted, and it's leaving out the women and children with missing body parts, with missing arms and legs, with burns over 90% of their body, of small kids with whole neighborhoods destroyed who have no idea what's going on or why they're being targeted. I mean, there's a human element to all of this that not only is frighteningly absent from the media coverage, but is frighteningly absent from many Americans' perception of what's actually going on.
Although I think people who have no other access to news, don't have access to the internet, but just have their daily newspaper, you can kind of read between the lines and find information that's important. Like this morning, if you pick up the Seattle PI and you look, there's a map in there of targets in Baghdad. They show an overhead view of the city of Baghdad, and they have information ministries and Iraqi intelligence, et cetera, circled on the map. And then they also helpfully for you denote where the mosques are, so that you can see that there are mosques right next to some of these targets. And as a human being, you know that where there are mosques, there are people living in that neighborhood. And so you can just tell by looking at the map that, God, there's probably people living right across the street from that building that's just been bombed. So you can get some idea that this is not a surgical war or surgical strikes like the Bush administration would have you think. And then if you read the actual articles, you get a picture in your mind, reading between the lines, of the firebombing of Baghdad, which you're not getting from seeing clips from BBC TV rebroadcast on Como or on King TV, and hearing these reporters talk about these strikes from 2 or 3 miles distant, and they can't get across the river to actually see what's happening. You can read some of the articles, particularly if you find Reuters articles. I've found Reuters articles to be better than most of the other.
Yes, I agree.
Most of the other print sources. You get a picture in your mind of Baghdad being firebombed, and of perhaps whole neighborhoods being exposed to enormous buildings, not small buildings, but enormous buildings exploding within their neighborhood and setting the whole neighborhood on fire.
And you know, Baghdad being a city of 5 million people, and we're talking about a city that was already a third world country before economic sanctions 12 years ago, made it one of the poorest countries on earth. You know, we had all of these visions in our media in the days leading up to this of people fleeing out of the cities or fleeing across the border to Kurdish-controlled parts of the north, where the Turks have now invaded, interestingly enough, talking about your unforeseen consequences that could have been foreseen. But, you know, it's the poorer people who didn't have the resources to leave or didn't have the ability to leave. And they're the ones who are trapped under the bombs right now, you know. So, and, you know, when you talk about mosques that are being on the map, those are also the places that are more likely to be set up as Red Crescent centers or places where people convene either just to be together or to pray or to whatever. So it's very helpful even when watching those things we just told you not to watch in the network news broadcast, you know, to remember that there's people underneath that light display.
Hmm. And the whole absurdity of the, even if we jumped to the conclusion that they were doing surgical strikes, which is obviously not true, but when the media presents or the State Department presents that, oh, those crafty Iraqis, they put their military bases or the military facilities right next to where people are. It's like, well, look what we do here in the U.S. I mean, look at D.C. when the Pentagon was hit. You know, I mean, that was like the Pentagon was filled with civilian people. Yeah, look at Seattle. Look at the Northwest, all the bases that are right next to, you know, communities where people live. You know, that's the way all societies put their lay things out.
Yeah, right. Obviously enough, people have to commute to their jobs, you know.
Right. And here in the U.S., we talk about families of military members over in the Gulf, you know, and we say, oh, look at these people, they're struggling, they're trying to make do without dad or mom, and yet we can't in our minds picture that these, that there are women and children related to Saddam Hussein's troops who are in these areas that are being bombed. You know, we can't stretch our minds far enough to encompass that.
Well, and not only that, but those soldiers often as not are conscripts, where at least in the United States they're volunteers.
Right.
I have to say that I'm having some problems with a lot of people among opponents of war saying, well, we support the troops, we just want to bring them home quickly, or we don't support what they're doing. You know, it reminds me as somebody who was primarily gay, coming of age in the early 80s, when an era when most of my friends from then and sexual partners died not too far later from either AIDS or drug use or whatever. And I remember how enraged I would get by Christian fundamentalists saying that they love the sinner but not the sin. And, you know, to me it's the same kind of thing. That, you know, what are we saying when we support the troops? Are we saying that we don't think they understand what they're doing? Well, by and large, they do. Are we saying that we absolve them all responsibility for following illegal orders in an illegal war when we're witnessing a war crime on TV in front of our eyes? You know, I certainly would hope for minimal casualties on all sides, but I don't necessarily hope for a quick war because we have people who are insane enough to drop nukes or large numbers of fireball-causing or firestorm-causing conventional weaponry or uranium-laden weaponry on Baghdad. I hope for minimal casualties, and I hope to see a war like this never, ever be repeated by the United States. And we got to start working toward that, you know, pretty much today and every day thereafter.
Well, I think a lot of the idea on supporting the troops is a lot of those people are forced into those jobs, you know, as their only outlet. And you're looking at...
I don't think that's necessarily as true here in the United States as it might be in a place like Iraq, for example, where economic opportunities, particularly under the sanctions, were so limited that the military might be the only course of action for someone who didn't want to starve to death. I mean, here in the United States, you have other options in most cases. And you have to understand that these people, when they go into the military, they also pledge to do whatever the commander-in-chief says, regardless of whoever that person turns out to be, in this case, George W. Bush. And I have a hard time myself having sympathy for people who are over in the Gulf right now manning tanks and flying stealth fighter bombers and firing off cruise missiles.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I've had plenty of people on this show when we've talked about recruiting in the schools that come in and point out that these recruiters are snapping up kids and they're not giving them the full story. And once the problem is once you're in there, you can't turn around and change your mind.
No, I understand that. I do understand that. But at the same time, you know, when you say something like we support our troops, it's a soundbite, and it's a soundbite in that is trying to convey a very complex set of emotions, but what it boils down to is we're really patriotic too, we just oppose this war. But the way it comes off sounding is, to anybody who is pro-military or pro-war, I think it comes off sounding hypocritical, and I think it comes off sounding fairly disrespectful. Like, you either think these soldiers don't really know what they're doing, or you think that they don't have any responsibility for what they're doing. And I don't think that serves the peace movement well. I think it's much simpler to say we hope they don't get hurt. But let's recognize also that right now an Iraqi civilian is in much greater danger of getting hurt or killed than an American soldier is. And, you know, of the few dozen or maybe couple hundred soldiers that will get killed or seriously wounded in this conflict, most of those will be by friendly fire. There is no real resistance to this. This is not a war. It's a massacre.
And I have to say, too, that I've known many, many GI resistors. I know resistors from the Vietnam War, several, who some didn't even go over to fight. Some came home deciding they weren't going back and they didn't want anybody they knew to go over there. And I also know people who resisted the Gulf War who decided they weren't going over to fight an oil war. And I have to say that that is also a continuing possibility for people in the military to resist being deployed when they feel that the war is unjust. Of course, that means they lose their job, but there are a lot of people out of work today who have lost their job, you know, and yeah. It's something that people survive.
Yeah, and unlike the other end of it. You know, I don't want to pile on the soldiers right now. What I wanted to speak to more was, you know, trying to encourage peace protesters and the peace movement in our community right now to not just shrink back to sort of the committed core, but to continue to cultivate the wide swath of the community that has been and I think continues to be concerned about how we came to the decision. Meaning the United States, how the Bush administration came to the decision to fight this war despite enormous international opposition, despite the preposterousness of their purported evidence for it, despite all the despites, despite the precedent that it sets, despite the danger that it puts us all in. And I think we're much better served off focusing on those things right now. Focusing on, this is a short-term struggle to minimize the casualties from this war and assure the rest of the world that Americans, many Americans, stand alongside people in the rest of the world that are outraged about this war. I think we need to be in the straits just so we can look ourselves in the mirror, as I said earlier. And also, longer term, I think we need to get Bush out of office next year. We may need to make sure that he's not replaced by a Republican or Democrat that surrounds himself with lunatics and puts the country through similar kind of policies.
Talk a little bit about the protests. I mean, protests are obviously been going on here. They've been going on internationally as well. Let's talk about that quickly.
Yeah, the protests internationally have been enormous. You had 100,000 people in Athens on Thursday. There were tens of thousands of people, 40,000 in Madrid.
200,000 in Rome yesterday.
Yeah, and they've just been getting larger and larger. Italy has had protesters all over in Turin, in Trieste, in Palermo, in Rome, in Genoa. London has had protests. Paris has had tens of thousands of people. There have been protests as well in the Middle East in places where protests are banned and where the government and the police crack down very severely and very violently against street demonstrations. There have been tens of thousands of people. There were 30,000 in Sana'a, the capital of Yemen, where police tear gassed and turned water cannon on demonstrators. And then when demonstrators didn't disperse, they fired on them with live ammunition and killed three people, including an 11-year-old kid. So, you know, there are thousands of demonstrators in Cairo where police have turned water cannon on people and the demonstrators have thrown rocks at cops in return. So the in the Middle East, you have thousands of people in the streets. Not all of them are fundamentalist Muslims. Many of them are just people who are anti-American at this point. And these demonstrations are, by and large, attempting to reach U.S. embassies. Some of them have surrounded U.S. embassies and fought pitched battles with the police. So it's not just here in America where there have been demonstrations. There have been demonstrations all over the world in Latin America. There was, I understand, an enormous demonstration in Beijing yesterday.
Yeah, well, enormous certainly by Chinese standards. It was a few thousand people.
Where again, demonstrations are largely banned, and the government can crack down very severely on people in the government,
I'm sorry, in this case also, especially in the Middle East, have every incentive to try and crack down on these protests because they're afraid that Islamists may be strong enough to threaten their government, especially governments that are U.S. allies or are dependent on U.S. aid.
Yeah, in a place like Egypt, for example, the protests started on Thursday, and the protesters keep coming back in larger numbers. And for the Egyptian government, that's a nightmare scenario because it could mean the government eventually coming down. I mean, they look at Venezuela, where Chavez has just barely survived over a month, maybe 2 months, of strikes and demonstrations, and that's what gives Middle Eastern potentates and tyrants nightmares.
Yeah, and Pakistan in particular is the frightening scenario in terms of international and global solidarity on this, and there have been demonstrations there as well. They really have opened a Pandora's box internationally, and if you look at BBC and some of these other international sources, those are the demonstrations that are being covered. American demonstrations are not receiving any news, by and large, in the rest of the world, which to me just suggests that we need to ramp it up here.
Speaking of which, when are the demonstrations scheduled for today?
Today's demonstration is billed as the Day of Outrage, and I believe it's going to be much more in the street and in your face than demonstrations in the prior days. It's hosted by NION, Not In Our Name group, and at 2 p.m. there's going to be a speak out followed by a snake march through the streets of downtown, which the snake march is being described as being a march of variable speed throughout, and I'm not sure that they even have a planned route, so I think it's going to be more of a
routes, it might be plural.
Right, I think it's going to be more of an attempt to stop traffic and be a non-violent civil disobedience action. For people who are not into...
Where does that start?
That's going to start at the federal building. Okay. All of these demonstrations are being planned from the federal building. For people who are not into that, there's going to be an 8 p.m. candlelight vigil down at the federal building, and there's pretty much going to be a consistent presence at the federal building all throughout this next week from what I understand.
Yeah.
Right now, there's a demonstration that is a morning procession. Mourning as in grieving over what's going on in Iraq, that is winding its way through Fremont out towards Ballard. You can probably catch that. It started at 7:30 this morning, but if you head over in that general direction, you'll probably be able to catch them.
And just as a heads up, I know that there are a number of people who want to protest who don't necessarily want to engage in civil disobedience, and folks have every right and expectation to do that. But the police presence at the federal building protests the last two evenings that would have been, by and large, very peaceful protests has very intentionally been a show of overwhelming force. And it's something that the police department and the mayor's office and the city council have been hearing about a lot the last 36 hours. If anybody's been at those events and feels similarly about the police intimidation tactics, call City Hall, call SPD, call the city council. Make your voice heard, because that kind of police tactics are unacceptable.
All right. Another incident that happened this week that got some media attention early on was Rachel Corrie.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that her death has been overshadowed by subsequent events. Unfortunate for Palestinian and Israel issues, and unfortunate because of the nature of those other events. But Rachel Corrie, young Evergreen senior from Olympia, very well known by the activist community and the student community in Olympia, killed last Sunday morning, I believe it was, or no, Saturday night or Sunday morning?
I think it was very early Sunday morning.
Yeah, Palestine time, rolled over and crushed to death by an Israeli bulldozer that was attempting to demolished the house of a Palestinian physician, as well as a couple of other hundred other houses in that area, not because of anything those families had done, but because it was within rocket range of the Israeli border. And Rachel, along with a number of other international nonviolent protesters, were trying to blockade and keep the army from doing that. Eyewitness accounts very strongly point to evidence that the Israeli army, the IDF, intentionally killed her. That the cab driver could see exactly what he was doing, knew that she was there. She was in a bright fluorescent orange vest. She had talked to him minutes before the incident. She was first lifted up along with the dirt from the blade of the bulldozer, so she was at eye level with the bulldozer. She was talking through a bullhorn, and then she was subsumed under the dirt from the blade. The blade and the bulldozer moved forward and then backed up again over her a second time. And the IDF, of course, said it was all a tragic mistake and is pledging to investigate. And her parents have been back to D.C. demanding congressional investigation, have gotten a somewhat but not entirely sympathetic hearing, certainly not as overtly hostile as Ben Linder in 1988, another Northwestern martyr to U.S.-backed thugs in another part of the world. But it's a reminder that there are really, really brave people in Palestine and in Iraq right now, acting as human shields, acting as nonviolent peacekeepers, putting their body on the line for their beliefs, for the idea that we need to take responsibility for our government's actions. And I would encourage, you know, the people who feel they can do so to start. We need to start putting our bodies and ourselves on the line in this community as well.
And I want to just talk for a minute about what Rachel probably would have talked about if she'd been here today, which is that this whole war in Iraq has been a cover or has covered for some atrocities in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, particularly in the Gaza Strip.
Yeah.
At least a year ago, perhaps a year and a half ago, the Israeli government was talking about how they would not go into the Gaza Strip because it would just be too incendiary. It would lead to too many casualties and too much civilian death. And now here we have Israeli tanks in the Gaza Strip going into the refugee camps and demolishing whole streets of houses and killing people. Just the week before Rachel died, I'm sure she probably had this on her mind as she was confronting the bulldozer. There was a pregnant woman who was killed in a house.
Yeah,
she was sleeping in her bed. The house next to hers was being demolished by a bulldozer in the middle of the night. Her husband and children escaped from the house, but she was pretty heavily pregnant and she didn't get out in time. A wall fell on her. So I'm sure Rachel was probably thinking about that.
And 12 other Palestinians died the same day that she did. And those deaths, of course, did not receive nearly the media attention. There's a lot of fear that the course of this war with Iraq is going to trigger one way or another some sort of a Palestinian crackdown on the West Bank, on Gaza. And so folks who are concerned about the situation in the Middle East and the way that this entire invasion could inflame that situation, you need to be keeping a careful eye on what Israel does in Palestine as well.
Quickly, can you give people some sources, alternative sources for information?
Well, first of all, I want to give people the name of a couple websites where you can go for information on the demonstrations coming up this next week.
Yeah.
The two sources I've found to be the best are the Snow Coalition website, which is snowcoalition.org. And you want to click on the link for emergency response plans for Seattle if you're in Seattle, for the east side if you're over in Bellevue, Kirkland, or Redmond, or for Peninsula if you're on the other side of the water. And then the other website I want to give you is the notinourname.seattle.net. They've been pretty good at updating their website daily for different demonstrations that are happening in Seattle.
Yeah, the other one that I would throw in is Seattle Activism, not activist, but activism with an M.org, which is a new website that's just come up, lists all anti-war demonstrations going on specifically, so it's not as top-heavy as Gene Buskin's calendar, and it has links to all the sponsoring, to the events and to the sponsoring organizations. So it's seattleactivism.org.
And to remember that you can just go down to the federal building. There's going to be a continuous presence there throughout the week, and people there will probably have more information about upcoming demonstrations, too.
All right. And then any general news sources you recommend?
Oh, lots of them. We don't really have time to go into them
we'll have a list in the upcoming issue of Eat the State.
Yeah, we will. There'll probably be a couple dozen there. Offhand, I would say Alternet has been very good. ZNet has been very good. Internationally, I would...
ZNet is www.zmag.org.
Yes, .org. Yeah.
And then you click on the ZNet link.
And Alternet is alternet.org. And then internationally, I would we mentioned BBC at bbc.co.uk. All the British media are .co.uk.
So the Independent is another good one. That's independent.co.uk.
Yeah, the Guardian, guardian.co.uk, Daily Telegraph, Daily Mirror.
Even the London Times is generally better than most of the U.S. press. For the wire service sources, I would pick Reuters over Associated Press, although they've both been better than most U.S. newspapers. My favorite place to go is Yahoo and click on their news link, and then they just collect articles from all over the place, and you can concentrate on reading the wire service articles there.
Yeah, I would throw in indymedia.org for protest information, and also anti-war.com is very, very,
very good.
Good,
yeah.
And we'll have a full list in Eat the State coming out this coming week.
All right. Well, with that, we're out of time. Talking once again with John Parrish and Maria Tomchik, co-editors at Eat the State. And quickly, where can people find Eat the State?
Eat the State can be found free in cafes, bookstores, coffee shops, and other places where you find free periodicals around Seattle and Bellevue and other areas. You can also find us on the web at www.eatthestate.org. Or if you have tips, questions, comments, or you want to volunteer, you can give us a call at 206-903-9461.
And it is a fine week for a very big fat meal.